Here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talk.
Here comes the money. Money.
Dollar, dollar. Dollar, dollar. Ching, ching, bling, bling. Cut the chatter. You ain't talking money, then you're talking no matter. Ching, ching, bling, bling.
Before we officially start this podcast, I want to remind everyone that the Ivy Sports Podcast feed is available on iTunes, Spotify, and Anchor. Please be sure to subscribe to be notified of all new podcasts from the Ivy Network, including the RC Report, Backdoor Cover, the NBA Show. You can also follow Ivy Sports on all social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We have a premium membership that allows you to approve without post without being approved by an admin. You can be commissioner for a day, receive free gambling picks, levy fines, and talk a lot of smack with other members in the group. And with that, we are back with another edition of the Backdoor Podcast, Ivy Sports Gambling Podcast. I am your host, Keith Fleming. With me, as always, is the gambling professor, Alan, a.k.a. Actively Lazy on Facebook, a.k.a. Ivy Yeezus. What's going on, Alan?
Not that much, man. Still searching for a golf winner.
God almighty.
I can't catch a break, man.
And for Morikawa to win as much as you've been on him at the PGA, we haven't done a podcast in 2 weeks. We apologize. I couldn't believe neither one of us took Colin Morikawa, especially you, because he's kind of like been your Xander this year.
Yeah, I hedged with him and got him at 9-1, but I mean, obviously he was
still really
way
good,
higher. Yeah, oh, yeah, 9-1 is definitely great. It's the highest that I've gotten on a live bet since Matthew Wolf won last year at 7-1. But even still, it's not the win that I want. But shout out to my friend Jeff. He won a ton on Morikawa. So I mean, at least somebody won.
Exactly.
But yeah, I just I don't know. It's just one of those things where it's just not lining up for me. And I keep having guys play well enough, but not win. So
I did have Casey at 9-1 to top 10. So, you know, that was okay, but it's.
Are you there? You kind of cut out.
Oh, I said I was disappointed in my picks to win at the PGA. None of them really came close to winning. Luckily, Casey at 9-1 made it not a horrible week, but. We're going to try to get back going. This week, we're previewing the TPC Boston event. This is the start of the FedEx. It's going to be only 3 tournaments this year. It's normally 4. So you have pretty much all the big names here this week. TPC Boston has not been used since the 2018 staging of the Dell Technologies Championship. It was a regular stop on tour previously, and there is plenty of course form to pursue. TP Boston is a long golf course. It's almost 7,350, and it's a par 71. It has very wide fairways, and I'm talking about, like, you could land an airplane down these fairways. They're so big. Bombers have had a lot of success here in the past. The rough is long, but, again, you have to really miss it off the tee to get in it. The greens are bent grass, and they're usually extremely fast, extremely undulated. The course winners... DeChambeau was the last guy to win here in 2018 at 18 under. JT in 2017 at 17 under. McIlroy and Fowler in 16 and 15 at 15 under. Chris Kirk in 14. Stenson in 13. McIlroy in 2012. Simpson 2011. Hoffman 2010. Stenson is the only guy to win out of all of those players I mentioned who did not drive it over 300 yards in driving distance for the week. Again, you got those really wild fairways. So you're going to see guys that hit it really far and gain a lot of strokes off the tee, have a lot of success here. But strokes gained approach is also really important. The highest percent of shots coming from over 200 yards comes at this event, which is unusual. So it shows the length of the golf course. And then typically scrambling plays a big part in this. DeChambeau is the only recent winner who was not near the top of the field in scrambling. He was 44th, but Justin Thomas in 2017 was first, as was Fowler, Simpson, Stenson, Kirk, and McIlroy. None of them rate worse than 6th in scrambling, so that is clearly something you should look at. And also, par 3 scoring has had a big factor in who wins this tournament. Bryson, Fowler, Kirk, Stenson, and McIlroy twice were all in the top 9 in par three efficiency, and Kirk and McIlroy in 14 and 12 led the field in that stat. So the putting is going to be kind of unpredictable, but I always love it when you have bent greens because it means guys like Patrick Reed, Ian Poulter, Jason Day, people that can really putt are going to have a chance, even if they don't hit it spectacular, to gain strokes on the field because of the size of these greens and how true they will roll. But I also will say I would not be the least bit surprised if the winner this week is not one of the top putters in the field, because you can actually just ball strike this golf course to death. Alan, before we get into the odds, is there anything that I did not mention or you want to elaborate a little bit more on that you think would be a key to success or to know about the golf course and the field?
Nah, you covered what I was thinking too. Like, we haven't talked about it much this year because a lot of the courses that they put through after the COVID stuff have kind of favored precision more than just flat out bombing. But this is the bomber course. It's what everybody's been waiting on. This is Bryson's week, man. He's favored on my bookie. He's probably favored all throughout. And I'll continue to say what I've been saying the whole time is that I just don't see him being able to close out the A++ fields. But I mean, I can't even slander DJ because it's a bomber course and there's wide fairways, and he might actually have a chance this week too if he cares, you know.
I completely agree with both of those statements. The one thing with Bryson, and actually we'll just get into these guys at the top of the board. So you have Bryson at 11-1, JT at 12-1, McIlroy and Rahm at 14-1, and DJ at 16-1. You know, I think you were kind of getting into DeChambeau. We talked about he hasn't proven yet he can win in a field that's this strong. And my other big concern with him is his scrambling. He got away with it in 2018. He was 44th, and he won the event. But as you could see from all those winners before, they either led the field or were in the top six. So that is obviously going to play a key factor. And he's not really gotten any better at his scrambling numbers. JT has a win here, doesn't have quite the track record that Rory McIlroy does, obviously, with two wins. But, I mean, who knows what Rory is going to show up. It's almost getting to the point where it's fair to say what you say about DJ, about Rory. It just sometimes seems like he's more into it than other tournaments, and he just can't seem to put together four great rounds, which, you know, concerns me. I really like Rahm at this venue. He just doesn't have any track history, but this is a course that should set up well for him. And then you mentioned with DJ, most weeks I'd say I wouldn't touch DJ at 16-1, and I probably still wouldn't here either, but you understand why the odds are where they're at. He played well at the PGA, and as Alan just said, it seems like when he wants to win and wants to compete, he has the talent to do it, and this course sets up perfectly for him. So if you're asking me, I would take Rahm out of these guys. I would like JT if his odds were closer to McIlroy and Rahm, but getting 14-1 with Rahm as opposed to 12-1 with JT would be why I'd go that direction. Which of those guys would you play?
Yeah, I'm on the Rahm train. When Rahm first came on tour, it was courses like this that I looked to play him on. So I feel like this is kind of a throwback scenario for me. I mean, he's in the best form he's ever been in. And I would have played Rahm when he was a rookie on this as a long shot, just because it does set up to his game very well. And it's about tour average as far as scoring goes. So, I mean, we're used to seeing Rahm, like you say it all the time, he bullies courses. He shouldn't have a problem with this particular
course. He's going to bully this one.
Yeah, he shouldn't have a problem. Like, I get, you know, course history, that does matter to some degree. But you also have to understand that, like, top form or what you see right now, like, these things can change. This is why they're professionals. So if you got a guy who doesn't consistently play well at this particular venue, but he's literally playing the best golf of his life and he's motivated, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to fade him out of this particular group. If Bryson was more consistent with the rounds 3 and 4, I might be willing, or more rounds 1 and 2, because he does pretty well 3 and 4, but he always kind of puts himself in a bind around rounds one and two, and then he just doesn't have
you
enough.
Sound like you're talking about Rory McIlroy. It's the same thing.
Yeah, and Rory's form has been very concerning. I used to be a Rory detractor in the sense that I just wouldn't take him because his odds were so low, and he did choke from time to time in majors and things like that. But the form that I'm seeing right now, it is kind of concerning. I just expect it more, man. Like those Sundays where he comes around and he's like 6-7 back, I just expect to see him kind of at least threaten a little. But he's been going backwards a lot, and it's very concerning.
He hasn't finished inside the top 30 since
then. Yeah, and we're talking about a guy who was at one point an automatic for top fives and tens, like no matter where.
For an entire year. 2019, yeah. The entire year, you could just mark it down.
And it could just be that maybe there's something going on that we don't know about. Maybe he's got a nagging injury and he just doesn't want to say, you know? Or maybe the idea of this playing schedule is getting to some people because they're not used to playing so routinely, like with such a long layoff. I don't know. But
the strengths of the field. I mean, they're actually up overall because you just have more guys, you know, good guys playing in each event. So, I mean, it's a little harder to win right now than it typically is, with the exception of the majors and the WGCs.
Yeah, and there is one little tidbit that we didn't mention in the beginning that should be said. I think this is the last event where there's a cut line, because I think after this it goes down to 70 and so forth and so on. But this week, obviously you'll have a cut line. Keep that in mind if you go heavy on some of these top guys on your DFS. Out of Rahm, Thomas, McIlroy, DJ, DeChambeau, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if at least two of them didn't make the cut.
Especially considering that it's not going to hurt their chances to win the $10 million at the end of the year. They're already in a position where, I mean, honestly, as long as they show up that last week, they're going to have a really good chance because they're going to be in at least that top 10, probably the top 5.
Yeah. So, we're on the same page with Rahm. I like Rahm in this particular venue, the way it sets up. I can't bring myself to say Bryson, so I'm gonna go with my second choice out of this group being JT. But at the end of the day, I really think this is a venue for Rahm.
One more thing before we move to the next set of guys. Most weeks we say, unless you have a really strong feeling about one of these guys, don't take the top 5 odds, because the return on the investment is not worth it. I kind of think that when you get to these kind of events late in the season, and especially on a course like this, where, I mean, McIlroy's won here twice, DeChambeau and Thomas have won here, DJ's played really well here, and obviously Rahm didn't have the experience, but I like more making a play here with one of these top 5s. I just think it's a higher percentage they win at this particular venue than most.
Yeah, not a week to really fade one of the top guys. I would definitely try to break it down to where I at least pick one of them, even if it's just at a hedge. You know, so if you throw in a $100 pot, you could put like $7-$8 on JT or Rahm, and you'll, if they win, you at least get your money back. So definitely look into that.
Okay, so the next group of guys, which I swear there's always this group of like 5-10 guys. It's like I really think the winner's coming from here. So we got Colin Morikawa at 20-1. Again, it just needs to be said, he's now won 3 times in his first 27 starts. He's won a major. We're going to find out really soon, Alan, if taking him at these odds of like 20-1 that are inflated because of his history, you're actually getting in before it bottoms out with the odds, and he's up there at that, you know, 10-14 with all the tournament favorites week in and week out because of the, you know, his performance, his wins, everything. Or it's going to go the other way, and we're going to go, man, I can't believe I was taking Colin Morikawa at 20-1 when, you know, I've won several times with him at 40, 50-1. Which do you think it's headed more towards?
It's hard to pick a guy coming off such a major win, and then he took the layoff. The thing that scares me about fading Morikawa is you talked about the approach shot distance. That's kind of his game, man. Mm-hmm. Like, that's his thing. It's his biggest strength. His putting actually hasn't been that great. And I know you had mentioned putting before, and I had said something in the group on somebody's thread. I think people kind of looked at me crazy, but I really feel like right now is easier to find a hot putter than to find any other variation of your golf game. So if you're setting yourself up with easier putts, it's easy to get hot, and that's probably common sense. But that's what I'm seeing with guys like Morikawa. And guys like Webb was doing before the last couple tournaments, but the ones where Webb Simpson has won, I don't think he's done anything spectacular with his putter. I saw Bryson made like a 90-foot putt. Mm-hmm. He was like putting out of his mind, but he wasn't making any ground because he kept putting himself in situations where he had to putt 90 feet, 80 feet, 70 feet. But then you get guys like Morikawa who's literally putting the ball like it's like a video game. Like what was the shot that he had on was it the 15th or 16th hole?
16th, the par four.
The par four, where literally every single day that the tournament was on, the commentators was like, look, if you go driver here, you're just setting yourself up for failure. And this dude goes driver and just plots it right there.
Yeah, it was impressive. To make the putt too.
And he made the putt, But think about it. The putt was simple. He's kept it very simple, and that's elevated his game to the status where he won a major. And can he replicate that on this course? Maybe. I mean, bentgrass isn't known to be extremely difficult putting surface, and it's by far
the easiest.
Yeah, and it's typically faster too. So I don't mind taking him if anything. Definitely taking him for a prop of a top 10, top 5. I feel like at this particular point, he's worth a shot that you have to invest in his game.
And so, just to explain what Alan means like with the bent greens and why I'm saying they're easier, there's very few variables with bent greens. What you see is what you get. They're normally very smooth. They roll well. You have Bermuda greens have grain, which will actually move the ball whatever direction the grain is growing. So a putt could actually be breaking right. And then if the grain is moving back to the left, you'll see a putt actually kind of move back to the left or straighten out, even though it doesn't look like it's going to. So that, for somebody like me who didn't grow up on Bermuda greens, has been frustrating my whole life. And then you have Poa greens that just get so bumpy. It's honestly why these guys hate playing in them, especially in the afternoons. You're more bitching about when they're on Poa greens than anything. So, again, bent greens are going to lead to more putters. And there's some names in this group that are some of the best putters in the world. You got Jason Day at 22-1. I actually, when I picked him for one of my official picks, I had him at 25-1. So you can see a lot of people are jumping on that. Patrick Reed at 28-1. Xander Schauffele at 20-1. You know, Day has a ton of success here. He's got 6 top 15s. He's been playing very well lately. You got Xander, you know, has a game that honestly travels anywhere, and this is a golf course that should reward that. And then Patrick Reed is sort of the guy that you would not think of when you're thinking of guys that should be someone to bet on in an event like this, because you're talking about somebody who hits it far, gains strokes off the tee, is a great iron player from outside 200 yards. Reed is none of those things, but he is one of the best scramblers in the world. He's one of the best putters in the world, and he loves this venue. He's had a good track record here. He's had a good track record at Palmer courses in general. Do you like all of those guys, one of them more than the other? Or, would you be okay with going three guys that aren't technically bombers, but they have success here and they're such great putters, it'd be worth it to take a look at them?
I struggle with taking Patrick Reed, but he's one of those guys I feel like he's going to win the week I don't pick him. Because his game has always been
kind of... He's the anti-Bryson right now. If you look at his wins, they're always in the biggest, deepest
event. Yeah, I was going to say, it's always in like an event where you don't really pay attention to him to start, but then he's so streaky. And when he gets going, like he'll drop 8-under, 9-under around.
He believes he's the best golfer out there. Like, he truly does. And, you know, it's one of those senses that in golf, I think that when you have enough talent, sometimes that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I mean, if he can convince himself he's the best golfer, then go for it. He's not, but I
mean, he's not.
That's his right to have that. But yeah, so Reed, I don't want to say fade him because he played last week too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he's probably gonna come in with a little momentum because I don't think he played too awful last week. Same with Webb Simpson, like he played last week. He's probably going to come
in last week. Yeah, he's going to come in before whatever he did.
I'm pretty sure. I'm looking at the strokes gained. Webb's up there.
Oh yeah.
For strokes gained on, yeah, he's almost at 2 strokes gained on bent grass. So, obviously you have to consider him. We're talking bombers. And approach shots, you gotta consider Tony Finau, who's
well, that's awesome. What I was gonna say. You got Koepka, yeah. Finau, and Berger right there that are all more of your traditional guys. Koepka and Berger don't have a track record here. Finau at least has one good finish. Is there one of those three guys, or do you think you could see any of those three guys doing well here this week?
I think Berger, he's another guy who's just been excelling this year. I know he historically
to put it lightly.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know historically he doesn't win that much on tour, but I know the source I use, Numberball, numberball.com, there's a lot of DFS guys on there, and he's got the spreadsheet that's pretty good on, like, strokes gained and current form and all these, like, equations of how he calculates it. But anyway, as far as current form goes on the field, Berger is probably a top 5 golfer right now. And that's crazy to say, but if you look at when he's played and how he's performed, that's essentially where he fits.
4 of his 5 starts, second, third, and 13th.
Yeah, so you could argue that at 33-1, you're getting some value on a really good golfer right now. And I think that given how this season has went for him, that would be my angle to try to maximize some value. I'm not necessarily looking to be like, but so safe in this tournament because with it being so open as far as like the fairways and then the bent grass difficulty not being that high as far as putting goes, it's really anybody's game. Like, so take your chances in this tournament. And at 33-1 with a guy like Daniel Berger, I'm willing to do that.
Okay, so one more group I want to spend some serious time talking about because, again, these are all ball strikers. They all hit it far enough to where you could see them winning. The putter is typically the problem with all of these guys, ironically. But again, I don't think that you have to putt great this week to win. Would it help? Of course. But I think you could win just by literally out ball striking the field. And you got Hideki at 40-1, Tiger at 40-1, Adam Scott at 40-1, Casey at 40-1, Fleetwood at 50-1, and Rose at 50-1. I don't even know if you can call Rose a ball striker right now because he is not hitting it great. Fleetwood is not playing his best either. But do any of those guys seem – or actually, excuse me, Hatton is also at 50-1. Do any of those guys stand out to you?
Hatton stands out to me because I'm just a sucker. I like Hatton at 50-1. I'm always going to probably take Hatton because I've been following him on the Euro Tour and even when he played PGA events before he actually won one, I was still taking him on props. I think, you know, you can make an argument his current form isn't that far off. I think the Poana greens kind of tricked him up a little bit, so I'm eager to see how he does on bent grass. But
he's not two top fives in his last.
Yeah, he's not known.
So he's playing bad.
Yeah, he's also probably not by definition known to be a bomber. But again, he's great with approach shots and he can putt.
Finished 12th here is only appearance.
Yeah, he's a little more consistent right now than any of these other names that you've named. Paul Casey is somewhat intriguing.
And last three starts here, 21st, 4th, and 2nd.
Yeah, and he's in good form as well. How's the weather? Is it going to be warm enough for Tiger?
Yeah, it's gonna be warm enough. It's actually supposed to be really nice up in Boston this weekend. I don't like Tiger to win. I will go ahead and tell you, I have him as one of my prop plays.
you don't like Tiger to win.
I don't. I know. But I tried to tell y'all when I was picking him almost every week that I really have to believe, as much as I love Tiger Woods, that he can actually win the tournament. And he just doesn't hit it far enough, in my opinion, even with his fantastic ball striking, which is still really good. He's going to get help here because the fairways are more wide. But unless he has an outstanding putting week, which he has not proven, honestly, since Augusta, that he can have, I just don't see him winning here. You need to remember he's finished 37th and 40th in his two starts, so he's made the cut. He does have history here. Just in the last 10 years, he has two top 10s here. Granted, those are nearer to 10 years ago than recently, but he did also finish 24th here in 2018. And if you remember, that was his first season back. He really was just starting to play well, but he has success here. I can't see him beating all these bombers. The guy I kind of want to talk about is Hideki. I know he's, hasn't done anything that special, but he has finished 21st, 22nd, 20th, and 22nd in four of his last five starts. So he's not that far off. And then in his last four starts at this venue, he finished 4th, 23rd, 15th, and 25th. I kind of like Hideki this week.
Yeah, he's got a game that could fit this course as well. And he's probably going under the radar a little bit because he hasn't done much since the Asian swing. Because on the Asian swing, he was doing pretty good. He was like almost winning all the tournaments. But since COVID and the return, I don't think he's done as well as he would have liked. And I'm not sure what exactly is the cause of that. A lot of times when I used to watch Hideki a lot and follow him when he was almost in contention, like every tournament, it was his putting that was killing him. Like he just, for some reason, just could not putt. And I know we've been saying, well, the putting doesn't matter that much this week. With this guy, that's literally the only thing that's ever stopped him from winning. So I guess it would be it would not matter as much to everybody else, but with him in particular, and Adam Scott, I'd say the same thing. Like, those are two guys that, in my mind, are notorious for not being able to finish the simplest of putts from time to time. And that could cost you. And they're both sitting at 40-1.
And now, Scott's another guy with four top 10s and five top 20s in the last eight starts here.
So I probably say this like every week, and I haven't been keeping track of whether or not I've been right or not. But in this price range, I think the winner might come from this particular price range, from the 30 to the 60 price range, 60-1 price range. And I think that's where we found Morikawa the other week, in that 30 to 60 price range. And as much as we've harped on, Rahm and some of these other top guys, again, if there's motivation, it's going to come from this 30 to 60 range, I think.
What do you think about Scheffler and Woodland, who are both at 60-1?
I can't talk bad about Scotty because of what he did the last time he was out on the course. I will say, I was big on Scotty Scheffler way back when we were doing the show in the beginning of the season. And every time I got disappointed. Like, he was good, but he just couldn't bring it together. And the one time I don't pick him on a prop or something like that, he just balls out. So I'm going to stay away from Scotty Scheffler. So you guys who do pick Scotty Scheffler will have some good luck, because apparently every time I pick him, he's not that good. But he's definitely got the talent. I think the thing that makes me excited about him on this course is that he can score. Like, he's not typically a par guy. So if there's wide fairways and he can get good lies on his second shot, he's going to put up some numbers. And that's what makes him really intriguing at 60-1. I still wish he was more of a long shot, given the strength of this field. And he hasn't won yet, but I understand the optimism. And 60-1, I mean, he's right behind a guy like Haddon, who's already won once this year. And then like Casey, who's at 40-1, but who's been in contention more often than not. Gary Woodland is also somebody that's typically known to be in contention on courses like this. So it's kind of funny to put him right here, but Matthew Fitzpatrick is the same odds, and probably you could say the same thing about him as well. Like, the course sets up to where with their game, they won't be penalized if they do make mistakes. So you have to kind of consider them at that 60-1 range.
Yeah, I actually do really like Scottie Scheffler this week. He has, again, kind of like what I was saying with Ron, even though he's a guy that's not played this golf course, his game sets up really well for it. Do you have any other long shots? Because Matthew Wolff's odds have come way down. He's somebody I really like. I like Louis Oosthuizen. He's at 70-1. Wolff is at 50-1. Wolff is somebody who just, I mean, I think if we were talking about what kind of player would you want to pick for this field, a bomber who gains strokes off the tee, Wolff would be the first name you think of. I think he's in the top six in both driving distance and strokes gained off the tee. His iron play has been much better over the last month. He's improved his putting, and he's kind of a streaky player.
Who is that?
Wolff.
Okay, I was going to say when
51.
I won.
Oh, okay. No, you're good at 50-1, Wolff. And then the other, Oosthuizen at 70-1. Louis has had a lot of success here, and he's, again, a guy that's just kind of tailor-made for this golf course. He typically plays well in, obviously, link-style golf courses. Some people have compared this sort of to an American-style link-style golf course, even though it's wide open because the greens are so large, and when you do miss the fairways, there's obviously a lot of thick rough. I like Louis for prop plays this week, obviously not to win. I do like Wolff as somebody potentially who could win. And then Jordan Spieth at 70-1, which I know this is insane that we're even talking about him, and I am not talking about him to win. But if there was ever a venue for Spieth, his last six starts here, he has a 12th, 2nd, 21st, 29th, and 4th. Do you think Spieth at a top 20 play would be crazy, or are you not touching it?
No, I don't think it's too crazy because the fairways are wider, and you said the rough's not necessarily that penalizing.
It is penalizing. It's just so – you have to hit such a bad tee shot to get into it on most holes.
So,
if you can drive a piece, you're going to stay out of it.
That's encouraging to me for Spieth because the one thing that scares me is his accuracy off the tee. And I know a lot of the courses we've had over the last couple months have been tree lined or the fairways have been narrow and the rough has been like really penalizing. So those particular courses scare me a little with him, but, his game is typically approach and putting. So if he can get good lies, he could definitely do top 20 in this field. I don't think that's a bad play at all.
Any other long shots you like?
So long shots. I'm sighing because I'm like, I can't give up on this dude. Cameron Champ is 75-1.
He's played well here.
Yeah. I like the idea of him being in contention. I just worry about his ability to reel it in because the course that we or the tournament that he played in, that he was like top basically five for pretty much the whole tournament, and then he just kind of blew it on Sunday. He just was too aggressive when he needed to chill out a little. I guess it was just the pressure of wanting to win. But sometimes you kind of got to let the game come to you. And I think that goes for every sport. Like when you press, sometimes you kind of put yourself at a disadvantage, you know, like in track, they say, you know, you run tight, you got to loosen up and then you run a little better. And pitching in baseball, you know, some guys get tight, get tense and they tend to get erratic on the strike zone. I would say the same happens in golf. Some guys kind of lock up a little and then their driver goes left, right. Shots that they were sinking before just don't work anymore, and they get bad rolls, things like that. So it just kind of unraveled for them. But I'm not going to give up on them at 75-1. And then for a prop, Harold Varner, a top 20, would probably give you some decent payout this week. And then why not take a swing at Phil? Hey, Phil likes the bomb, man. Phil's all about bombing. And we got wide fairways. And, you know, you talk, I think you had mentioned not necessarily scrambling, but approach shots. Phil, that's still part of his game, man.
Phil still can scramble, too.
Yeah, like that's still like his natural ability is still there to make it happen. He's at 100-1 on my bookie. So I would think that he would probably be like 5-1 or something like that for a top 20. It's worth a shot, honestly. It's definitely worth the shot. And then probably look at Ryan Palmer as a top 20. He's been somewhat consistent, but fell off a little over the last like 3-4 tournaments. But I would expect, with this being basically the last tournament with the cut line and stuff like that, that guys like him would find some kind of form and hit a top 20 again.
All right, so I'll go ahead and give you my official picks. I'm going to give John Rahm 14-1, and all these will be $20 bets. Jason Day at 25-1. He has 6 top 15s at this venue. Has only finished in the top 7 in his last 4 PGA events. Great putter. Like, Day is probably my favorite guy this week. I think he's due to win, and I think this track sets up really well for him. Reed at 28-1 is kind of my gut feeling. I know that we've talked about here recently. Berger at 33-1. He doesn't have too much to write home from here. He has 4 career starts, a top 15 finish. But as you mentioned, he's playing so well right now, and this course sets up well for him, that I would take him on just about any venue that's going to put a premium on ball striking. And then you have Wolf at 70-1. He is 8th in driving distance, 7th in strokes gained. And over the last 6 tournaments, he's 18th in approach play, something he's not known for. He led the field at the PGA in ball striking and has been playing really well with 3 top 10s in his last 6 starts. And then for the top 10, I have 2 plays of Matthew Wolf at plus 550, doubling down on him. Doc Redman at 11-1. I really like this kid. He has played so good since the season has returned. I think he's been in the top 25 in like 7 out of the last 8 events. And I watched that entire round on Sunday. He hit 4 of his good of putts as you could possibly hit that were all very difficult putts that at the last second either lipped out or just stopped breaking and missed by a fraction. So I was impressed in that kind of that first big situation for him. He did that. I think it's going to give him confidence. He has the game for this golf course as well. 11-1, top 10, I like that. My top 20 plays are a lot safer than normal. I'm going with Oosthuizen at plus 350. He's never finished outside the top 20 in his 5 starts here. And Tiger Woods at plus 200. I just think Tiger also needs a top 20 finish because if not, he's going to miss out again on East Lake, which he's Tiger Woods, like Michael Jordan, all other great professional athletes. I'm sure he did not appreciate not being in the final event of the year. I expect him to come out and play well in these first 2 events to make it to East Lake. And then for top 5, I have Tommy Fleetwood at 9-1. He has a top 25 in his only career start here. And again, he's kind of one of those guys that I could just see playing well at this golf course. And he's going to be able to really let it rip off the tee because he normally will aim for fairways, hit a lot of 3 woods and stuff. I think you'll see him hit more drivers this week. So those are my official picks. Is there anything you want to say about those? If not, there's one other name we didn't mention that I just wanted to get your thoughts on.
I like the Redman pick. I was going to say for props, looking at Max Homa and Adam Hadwin, I mean, there are some pretty high odds. I mean, Max is 200-1 and Hadwin is 140-1. And I mean, just looking for top 20 props, see how they might fare. And I think this particular tournament is the tournament. Like, look, you got Matt Kuchar at 110-1. Like, I mean, I get it. It's a bombing course per se. But Bubba Watson is known to
that. That was the guy I wanted to bring up.
Yeah, to bomb, and he's at 125-1. I mean, these guys who you know can stretch it off the tee a little, you might want to consider taking shots on them.
I'm thinking about taking Bubba for sure. Like, I mean, he's not an official pick, but again, yeah. You just said it, 125-1 for Bubba, who's actually played pretty well this year. He has a decent track record at this course. And, I mean, especially if Bubba could get the putter going, you know, who knows? I do like the fact that Bubba's made the cut 7 out of 9 times here. because usually Bubba either hates a golf course or loves it. If he hates it, he misses the cut every time. So, you know, again, for those odds, I mean, he'll throw a couple of dollars down on it. So is there any other thing from the TPC Boston this week you want to talk about or the world of golf?
Nah, man, shoot your shot this week, yo.
I'm sorry, I do have one question. Morikawa, do you think it would make sense to try to get him now for one of the majors? Because if he wins one of these last three events, and you need to remember that it's 70 people for the second event and 30 for the third, his odds are only going to get, you know, higher slash lower for USA buyer. Would it make sense to go ahead and do that now, or would you wait?
It would make sense for you to take anybody that you think is trending up right now, and it doesn't look like the books have caught on to it yet. So, yeah, I'm looking at Hadwin's name, but Morikawa, yes. And if he's in this at 20-1, you got to think, far as like a future goes, he's probably like 40 or 50-1. By the time that particular tournament comes up, he's going to be back down here at the 20-1 range. Definitely want to take him. And he's in good form, man.
He's going to play very well at both a U.S. Yeah. Open and a Masters.
And I think that's something that we probably could discuss a little more if we split the shows up. But as far as golf goes, I saw a lot of guys being kind of like pessimistic about him. Morikawa has really been excelling on the tour this year, and it's one of those things where I wasn't that shocked that he won.
He's won three times in 27 tries and has a major. Anybody who says they expect more is crazy.
And it's the ability to really dial it in and finish it. Like, he seized that moment. Nobody gave that to him. Like, he took it. And I think that's the biggest takeaway from that tournament. Sometimes when guys get their first win, they do just enough to win, and somebody kind of has a dud. Like, no, he came and literally took charge of that tournament and took it. And I think that's really huge for him to get that kind of win, be that confident, stay in good form, and then coming into these to the PGA Championship like playoffs. Like, yeah, I think it would be smart to take him or anybody else that you think is in good form, but hasn't necessarily been picked up by the odds makers.
Two more things real quick on him. So the thing that's most impressed me about him is, you got to remember, he's only missed one cut, which is something you always brought up, you know, when he was first kind of making his rise. Tiger was that way in his prime, that he never missed cuts. And it's so unusual in the modern game to have any guy make 27 out of 28 cuts, or 26 out of 27, whatever it is. And it just kind of shows that he's just got stone. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's a competitor. It matters to him. Every round, every shot matters to him. Those are the guys that usually have success in majors. And it kind of reminds me a little bit of Jordan Spieth when he won the Masters and then went and won the U.S. Open the very next major. And it would not surprise me if Morikawa, you know, won the PGA and then went to the U.S. Open, which is honestly, I think, a venue that's going to better suit his skill set than a PGA Championship, and would win another. So again, if you can get that at, you know, 30-40-1, I would definitely take it, especially if he finishes off strong these next 3 weeks, because the odds are only going to go down.
Yeah, definitely. Any future with him in it, definitely look into it. I'm not going to discourage that at all.
Okay, so let's move on to Major League Baseball and WNBA before we get out of here. And we're going to talk NBA later, right?
Yeah, the NBA gambling section will be on the podcast tonight. And I'll give you a call. You come in and do the last 30 minutes. But we'll be talking more about NBA strategy and gambling there. I think Corey's probably better suited to explain things to people. He's the one who got me involved in NBA gambling. And even now, I still don't go as hard on NBA gambling as you would think. But he's like, that's his thing. So
I'm excited to talk to the other Carlton brother.
Yeah.
Haven't gotten to know RC a little bit. I'm very excited to speak with Corey. I know he's going to be super smart and probably really funny. So Major League Baseball, you've still been having a lot of success. And one thing that, and again, I'm not an expert at baseball betting, but we talked about this briefly before we came on the air, that I thought it was weird that, you know, there's, I think, been seven teams that have a, you know, win-loss against a spread of 60% or higher. You told me that's fairly normal. But then you look at the Yankees at 17-7. It's so far above everybody else in Major League Baseball. When you see a team winning at that rate, do you jump on it and ride it basically until they show they're not going to win at that clip? Or do you look at it as, you know, they eventually are not going to continue to win at this rate, and it's probably better to kind of stay away?
The Yankees are a special case because they did this shit last year. And there was times last year when they rolled out a lineup and I didn't know who was who. Like, now I know who Urshela is, and I know who some of these other guys are. But before last year, like, they had at one point, I think they didn't have DJ, they didn't have Stan, they didn't have Judge, they didn't have Sanchez, and they were still beating the shit out of people. And it was incredible. But the thing about the Yankees is very unique. And I know there's other teams obviously still covering the spread. But those teams, I would dare say the Yankees have the best bullpen out of all the teams that are consistently covering the spread. And they've been doing that this year without Aroldis Chapman, who just came back yesterday. So they had Zach Britton, who at one point was going to be a Cy Young winner out of the bullpen, or considered a Cy Young winner out of the bullpen. Like, he was really good when he was with the Orioles, and he didn't have any drop off once they got him in New York. Their manager seems to really know, Aaron Boone seems to really know his squad, and I think that really helps. The squad that they roll out without Stanton in the lineup and Judge is a more consistent squad as far as batting average goes, and I think that really helps as well. And I think they're a better defensive squad when Judge and Stanton are not in the field, and that really helps as well. So it's just kind of a unique situation as far as, like, how do you bet that? So baseball holds you accountable for your bets. There's a lot of juice on a lot of lines. So you can get the Yankees at a run and a half most nights around, like, negative 180 or minus 180, minus 200 on most nights, because Vegas isn't going to let you take advantage of the fact that they have the best bullpen. And that's essentially what you're betting on when you take those spreads. You're betting on the team's bullpen to really hold the lead, you know? And so it's more of just a calculation. Find what makes you comfortable, what you're willing to risk in case they do lose, that you're not going to, like, want to smack somebody. And then I would say just take your time. And when you feel comfortable, hit the hammer. So I've been hammering a lot of baseball bets lately, but I'm in my comfort zone right now. And typically throughout a regular season, I would say my August has usually been my best month. And I watch a lot of baseball. I listen to a lot of baseball. I watch MLB Network every chance that I can. But a lot of it is honestly me listening to the radio, like, because I have the MLB app. And I just turn the game on if I'm just chilling in the house.
So what do you look for? Like, for just, let's just say today, you go to look at the slate of games. Are you paying more attention to the starters that are starting for each team? Are you paying more attention to just the talent level of the two teams going against each other? Are you looking for the spread and the odds? Like, what is the first thing that stands out to you in that situation that makes you want to pick a baseball game? Like, you think this is going to be a winner?
So this afternoon slate was Rockies, Astros, Padres, Rangers, and Giants, Angels, right? So I got three games. I didn't want to touch the Rockies, Astros, because I'm not really a big fan of the Astros bats right now. And the key indicator that the Astros are struggling to hit was when they moved Altuve down to, like, seventh in the lineup.
He's batting under 200.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's a key cog in their offense. So if he's hitting, they're scoring. But if he's not hitting, then...
Well, he hasn't proved he can hit without signals.
Yeah, so excuse me. I was gonna say, so I'm not too hype on that. I'm also not too hype on the Astros when they don't have Springer as the leadoff. So a lot of this is me knowing the teams. Like, I know the general 100% healthy Astro lineup and how it usually looks. Springer is a big key. Altuve is a big key. Correa is a big key. They don't have those three. Now, Correa is typically injured anyway the last couple of years, so I could even overlook that if Altuve was still batting second and Springer was batting first. They've also got a monster in Alvarez as in his second year. Now, I don't think he's a prospect, but he's not in the lineup. So that's a lot of pop missing out of the lineup. And
against him in that situation, or so, do you just not pick that game and go to the next one?
So in this situation, because I didn't like the lineup, and I don't really like Centella, or however you say his name, is the Rockies pitcher. His last couple starts have been kind of shaky. It wasn't worth the risk, you know? Like, in my mind, it wasn't worth the risk. So I moved down to my next game, which is Padres-Rangers. I know Mike Minor. I've known Mike Minor since he was a Brave prospect. I followed him his whole career. He is not pitching well right now. San Diego Padres are one of the hottest teams in baseball. They just got thrown at last night. There was all this drama because Tatis went yard on a 3-0 count. So in my mind, they're going to be just as motivated today to kind of lay it on. And so they're going against a guy that's not pitching well. They had a run line of 4.5. The game is at 9. They're pitching looks to be a rookie pitcher whose ERA was like 10. Not really enough data to really say that the rookie pitcher is going to be like terrible, but he's 21. That's really young. Is probably is definitely his first MLB start of this season.
He's probably not going to go deep, right?
Yeah, yeah. And the Rangers have been struggle bus when it comes to hitting. But I know I've been following this series, and I've been following the Rangers since they left Colorado. It's a collection of data, you know, from watching games and listening to games and things like that. Their bullpen is very taxed. It's a perfect setup for over on the Padres side. So I took the over 4.5. And I hammered it, and the Padres actually got a grand slam in the first inning. It was 4-0, and then they just got the other two runs in the fourth, so it's 6-0. And then I also took a chance on taking the Padres-Rangers game in general over 9. So that might not particularly hit, but it's a calculated risk. Like, I put most of my money on what I was confident in the Padres' side, and then I also put a little bit of money on the over in general. So
you're basically looking for one strength versus one weakness between
the
two teams.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's your best bet in baseball. That is your absolute best bet. I don't care what nobody says. I don't care if they claim they got some formula system. They're pro. Because, I mean, when it comes to baseball, I've heard a lot of stupid shit, man. And as a fan of the sport, like, I know baseball. I watch baseball. It's like you in golf. As a fan of the sport, I'm telling you, man, the best way to make money is to play strengths against weaknesses, for sure. Now, it doesn't always land, and that's fine. That's part of the game. Like,
you just want to be around 55-60%.
Yeah, 55-60%. Right? And if you play to the strength, you will be there 55-60% of the time. And there are some times where some crazy, goofy stuff will happen, but you just have to stay consistent and don't get carried away. You should never put all your pot on a baseball bet. I don't care who's playing. You should never do that. Trust me, I learned the hard way. I'll never forget. I lost $3,000. I lost $3,000 on the Oakland Athletics going over 3.5 runs in a time where Moneyball was literally homering every other at bat. I mean, they were one of the strongest offenses in baseball.
It's like the winning streak scene from the movie.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. Like, they were crushing, and I remember I was working overnights. I put $3,000 on it. They were going against like the Blue Jays or something, and I was like, dude, this is a triple A pitcher, man. This is a lot, right? They got 3 runs in the first inning, and I kid you not, it was the most ridiculous base running, goofiest shit, and they didn't cover. So I literally watched for 8 innings as a team that was averaging about 6 runs a game couldn't get 1 run against one of the worst bullpens and a triple A pitcher. And I mean, I learned a valuable lesson. Never put all of your pot on a baseball bet, period.
That's the low side of gambling.
I took risk on football, like college football, stuff like that. and it's paid off just fine. And I haven't had to sweat as much, even college basketball. I haven't had to sweat as much. But there is no baseball bet I've ever placed where I don't sweat because I've seen so much.
Well, it's 162 games, right? So they're all so unpredictable.
Yeah. And in this particular season is kind of weird because there's only 60 games. So there are teams like the Orioles and Marlins who've been playing, like who've been winning. But you don't – I mean, you can't make any sense of it. And then there's like COVID statistics where – I think a guy in our group, Tyler, had posted, and it's definitely true, people who come from the COVID quarantines, the teams that come from the COVID quarantines, have literally went undefeated in their first game back every single time. And a lot of those games because
automation.
Yeah, but a lot of those games because they're coming off such a long layoff, they're underdogs. So there's value in that. Now, where I find the most value in baseball is weather-related plays. So I don't know if you've been following my plays in the regular group, the IBS group. So I put the little goofy Bugs Bunny meme up with the guys doing the cha-cha around the bases. But it's funny because it just lets people know, like, hey, I'm taking this over. I've been targeting, obviously, Colorado games in Colorado when it's over 90 degrees and the air is really thin. Doesn't really matter where the wind's blowing. It's over 90 degrees. Great American Park, Cincinnati, when they do play, when it's hot there during the summer, I typically target there. I got bit in the butt last night, but I'm going to stick with it. When the roof's open in Arizona, it plays just like Coors Field because the stadium's above sea level, so and the air's real thin. It's like desert heat. So it plays really high scoring when the roof's open. And so I played it last night. It bit me in the butt, like I said. But typically, because they had to close it because of a
55-60% Allen.
Yeah, dust storm. Yeah. So, but yeah, weather related. So I even took the other night. The Yankees played the Red Sox. I don't even think anybody watched, but it was J-Hap was up to pitch, and he's been okay his last couple starts. But I know baseball, and I know Hap, I know the Yankees, I just know the sport. He's trending in the right direction for me, right? The Red Sox suck. Now, historically, even when they suck, they've still been able to hit left-handed pitching, but they're on another level of suck. Like, there's something going on in that clubhouse. The guys don't seem very motivated, and the people who do seem motivated are the guys who got traded for Mookie Betts, and they're not very good. So I took a calculated risk, and I hammered the Red Sox under 4.5 runs. One, because of the current form of both teams, like the Red Sox didn't look like they were motivated. They weren't playing well. Two, it was literally 63 degrees at first pitch, and the wind was blowing in from left field. I know Yankee Stadium dimensions. If the wind's blowing in from left field and it's cold, the ball is not going anywhere. It's not going anywhere. And in order for it to get out, you basically have to have a lot of good pop going to right field. And the Red Sox don't have that. So I took the under 4.5 and I hammered it. And they only scored one run. And it was like, it's just a calculated risk. But I would encourage people to really look heavy into weather variations and how that affects run lines in baseball. And I think his name's Kevin Roth or Keith Roth. He's on Roto Grinders. You can follow him on Twitter, and he'll give you like basic alerts, or you could pay for the little weather package. I think he works for the Weather Channel, or used to work for the Weather Channel. He also does golf weather as well. But if you buy his package, I think it's $19.99 a month. He's got a formula, and he's got a system where it will tell you whether or not the night that you're thinking about betting on baseball is going to be a decent night for the ball to basically fly out the park. And and I used that for about 7 months last year, basically like the whole season. And I kind of figured it out on my own, so I don't really use it anymore. And so the stadium dimensions are a little goofy because sometimes the wind blowing in doesn't affect it as much. Wrigley Field is a stadium where the wind gusts coming in kind of varies. You get 10 miles an hour wind at Wrigley blowing in from center field. That's typical there. The ball will still fly. But if you get 20 miles per hour wind, then nah, it's not gonna fly. So you just got kind of.
Do you want to? I know we were going to talk about the WNBA, which I know most people laugh, but you've told me it's, you know, one of the more consistent winners that you've had over the last couple of years is betting on WNBA. Do you want to save that for the next podcast since we're over an hour, or do you want to do it now?
Yeah, I'd save it. Matter of fact, I'll just add it to the NBA podcast tonight. I mean, Corey low-key bets it too. He won't admit it. But
why
it's
are
funny
people low key? And if you're winning money, why would you?
Well, it's just our personal gimmick going back and forth about it. But Corey put me on to WNBA, and I don't think he thought that I would take it as serious as I did. But I
how long had he known you?
He's known me. They've.
I'm saying, Alan, you take everything pretty seriously when it comes.
I know,
to
but like with soccer and some of the other things, it like hockey. Hockey is always an experiment for me for a month. I make money and then I just get out of it. Like I don't keep it going. I think that's kind of what people thought was going to happen with WNBA with me. But I literally, like last year alone, I was almost like 75%, and I was just crushing. Like the amount of money I was putting on these games is probably more than some of these girls make per game. And I was just winning so much. So I was like, I even had the WNBA league pass. I don't have the NBA league pass. I have the WNBA league pass. That's how serious it is. And it's hilarious. Trust me, everybody, every single person I come in contact with has judged me. Even my wife judges me for being so into WNBA, but hey,
I'm not going to judge you, Alan.
But, yeah, just so you know, the Rangers got a 3-run homer. It's 6-3. So, at best, I'm pushing on my second play. Or at worst, I'm pushing on the second play. But, yeah, again, calculated risk there. It paid off. It's been paying off a lot. I've been getting a lot of late runs. I will throw out some tidbits for people who did happen to listen for the hour over. Healthy trends right now. Diamondbacks second half games over. So second half in baseball starts after the fifth inning. Diamondbacks have one of the worst bullpens in Major League Baseball. Now, the Orioles have a terrible pitching staff, but their bullpen isn't as shaky. So it's one of those things that it'll kind of trick you, because if you just go by the ERA, you'll say, oh, well, the Orioles will probably, like, their ERA is terrible. I should play that too. No, it's a little trickier. That bullpen in Arizona consistently gives up at least 2 to 3 runs a night. And most of the run lines are at 3.5. So you're making pretty good profit if you're playing that pretty consistently this year. And then the other healthy trend is Minnesota Twins. Run line at a game and a half, or a run and a half when they're at home. And it pretty much any pitching matchup that's the ERA of the opposing pitchers at least 4 or up. If the pitching sucks or the starting pitcher sucks, the Twins jump on them so early that a lot of times they just cruise to the win at the end. I think the majority of the runs I've seen from the Twins have come in the first 5 innings. So you're good to take them first 5 to win money line, first 5 to cover the spread. Any overs that are 4.5, 5 runs, you're good to take them on most nights as well, because they just jump on people so early. The brunt of their scoring comes in the beginning of the game. And a lot of times those lines are very low. So take advantage of that. And then lastly, I have to share this too. I'm sorry. I know I'm talking a lot. Yamamoto, that's his last name. He's a pitcher for the Marlins. His ERA in Florida is 6, literally, for his career. It's a 6 ERA, and it's not a joke. It's not a joke. I think he's had – let me double-check real quick, because I've been playing this bet for 2 years solid, for sure, his name's Jordan Yamamoto. He's 24 years old, and like I said, I've been playing this pretty solidly. He's had one home game this year. They didn't, or two home games, because they're not counting that second one. And then his ERA in those two home games is 20. I mean, obviously it's just two games, But I'm letting you know, like, this is a real healthy trend. In 2019, his ERA in 2019 at home, I'm trying to pull up, was 6. So it was, again, it's real high. He had 8 starts at home and his ERA was at 6. You're getting run lines against a pitcher like this at 4.5. Yesterday, the Mets were at 4.5 runs on the run line. And the over under in the first 5 innings was at 5 runs. And you're talking, this guy has a 20 ERA and he's got a 6 ERA over the course of a season last year. I would have put my kid up on that. And I'm joking, of course. But I'm just saying, like, those are healthy trends that are working for me right now. And that's where you find your niche in baseball. Like, you find a healthy trend. Other people might not see it. That's fine. Who cares? If it's winning, if it's hitting, then keep planning until the wheels fall off. And make sure you know the reason why you lost. I think that's also the most important with anything you do in gambling. You need to know why you lost. So that way you can make adjustments. And baseball is night-to-night adjustments. It's not like other sports, especially with them fitting these games in at 60 games in 66 days. I mean, every single night there's an adjustment. So you just have to make sure you pay attention, whether it's just looking at the stat line, watching highlights, just get some kind of information from the game that you bet on, so that way you can use it for the next game. Case in point, my Rangers bullpen is washed going into this series against the Padres, and I played that today because Minor is struggling. They're going to have to go to the pen early. Boom, I got my bet. And it was a calculation of over a week of data that I collected myself, and it worked. So that's basically how you have to make it work for you in baseball. So I'm done.
Before we get out of here, tell them where they can get your picks up.
All right. Picks for golf?
I'm talking about all your picks that you post. They have to do to get the
baseball picks, you just have to join the IBS group. I'm trying to do it at least once a day. If I find an over that I really like, just join Iconoclastically Bombastic Sports. And then just look for my post, or you can just add me.
You don't have to learn how to say the name. You just have to know. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking about to join the group for those out there. If you haven't joined it, don't be intimidated by that.
And then you can also join the IBS All-Star group. That's where I post my one NBA play a day. And then occasionally I throw in something that I might like. I definitely, when we have the big horse races, if I cap those, I give that out for free in there.
And you're there for advice for other All-Stars and stuff.
Yeah. Anytime, you know, you want to talk about something, I mean, even if I don't know, I'll try to figure it out or work with you to figure it out. And then, honestly, you could also hit me up. And I've been working packages for $50 right now for a month of plays. I mean, you decide what your pot is on that. I mean, the guys that typically come to me, they're probably betting hundreds and hundreds of dollars. They're not betting just like $5 or $10. But if that's your pot, it doesn't matter. I just try to make sure that you at least win more than you invested in the $50 for that month. And I know right now we're doing pretty good, except for golf, which is fine. And it happens from time to time.
Well, in the last 6 weeks, we just had Webb Simpson as a winner, not seven tournaments ago.
Yeah, so it's just a matter of people controlling how much they spend. But, yeah, that works. Or you could do like Scott did and just hit me up randomly one day and ask me to give you something that wins and no pressure, you know?
The one thing before we get out of here real quick is just I've had some success in daily fantasy lately with golf, which is still kind of weird to say. But, again, stick with the Bombers. I really like Day, guys like Finau. Look at Bubba Watson at 7,200, Wolf at 7,800, Oosthuizen's at 7,500. He's never finished outside the top 25 in this event. And then if you just want to get, you know, like a guy like Tiger, I even like this week because he's just below some of the bigger names. And honestly, what Alan was saying earlier, I actually think it's a better chance he definitely makes a cut where those guys won't. But other than that, we will be back for the NBA podcast later tonight. I'm going to jump on at the end to talk gambling. And the Team Turnbuckle podcast just posted a new podcast on Sunday night. We'll be getting together again on Thursday to do a SummerSlam preview. And with that, this has been another edition of the Backdoor Cover.